This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. There is no thrill like finding out more about your ancestors, but traditional genealogy, which relies heavily on marriage and birth records, can leave out the rich stories of some of our forebears. Throughout this year, the Ohio History Connection has offered up a series of workshops called Where Are My Single Folk? It's all about finding those family members who never married or passed away unmarried, including those who might have been LGBT or Q. Using creative means of searching for details about their lives can lead to a more inclusive and complete family tree. I spoke earlier with a panel about this series. Here is our recorded conversation. Joining us now is Stuart Blondon-Trainman. He is a genealogist and presented for the series Where Are My Single Folk? Stuart, thank you so much for being with us.
Yes, thank you very much for this opportunity.
We have Phoebe Beiser, Ohio Lesbian Archives co-founder and board president, also a retired librarian and assistant manager of the History and Genealogy Department at the Public Library of Cincinnati in Hamilton County. Phoebe, thank you for being with us.
Glad to be here. Thanks.
Also with us, Karen Robertson, Ohio History Connection Manuscripts Curator. Karen, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And of course, Karen also works with the Gay Ohio History Initiative, and we can talk a bit about that coming up. Stuart, this is an interesting area to explore, and it's one that you become a bit of an expert in. So thank goodness for you, because I'm sure there are a lot of people who identify as LGBT or Q and want to know whether they've got relatives down the line who also identified that way, whether they did so the way we acknowledge it now or otherwise. So where does one begin?
Right. So the point of the presentation that I've been giving on LGBTQ genealogy is for everybody, not just LGBTQ genealogists, but raising awareness that we all have LGBTQ people in our trees. LGBTQ people have always been here. So how do you identify them when there are no marriage records or other legal records? And you know, and throughout history, people tended to live in hiding, have clandestine relationships because for safety reasons. So where do you begin? Well, a lot of genealogists begin with the census. That's our first clue to start seeing where people were living and who they were living with. So I give examples of women who've lived together in 1920 and then again in 1930 and possibly again in 1940. When you find people who are living together over time, that gives you some information about their relationship. They may be listed as roomers or lodgers or boarders, but you get a sense that they're not really renting a room from that the head of the household. There's something else going on in that relationship.
So how do you reach that conclusion, though, without knowing for certain? Because sure, there is absolute data that two women may have lived together in 1920 and again in 1930, but when you start to project onto them what their relationship is, how do you do that with a clear conscience?
And that's how you find other records. No single record is going to give us the entire story of any person's life. So we also start looking for newspapers. Are there any articles about them? Obituaries. We look at cemeteries and headstones. Were they buried together? In the obituary, were they mentioned as a longtime partner or a devoted friend? Mm-hmm. In the census, we also find the term partner, where there's the head of house. And then if you are, the instructions are, if you are unmarried, by not related by blood, but you are sharing an abode, then you can write head for one person and partner for the other. So that's also a clue. It's not an absolute, but it's a clue. And I give examples of the term partner in the presentation as well.
Have you done your own genealogy for your own family tree?
I have done many genealogies, including my own and my husband's and my children's and friends. Yes.
Well, let's talk about you specifically, if you're willing to, of course.
Absolutely.
Did you find LGBTQ people in your own family history?
I have not in my own family history, other than myself and two cousins, but they're out, so I know about them.
Right.
But, you know, in terms of historically, I have not found that.
Okay. And well, can you help us understand then for some people that you have completed some projects for, where you have identified sure. with, you know, what seems to be undeniable evidence?
Well, there's one of the stories that I tell is about Howard Houghton Clapp. He was a man who lived in the early 1900s in Yonkers, New York. And he was a mortician, an organist, a member of the Church of Christ Scientists. And there's a lot in his story that, as I was researching him, that tickled my rainbow flag, that said he is a bit different. You know, he's single, he's never married, he's never had children. Again, none of that is says that he is gay, but there's enough there that said, we should look into this guy a little bit more. What other clues can I find? What other records can I find that helps support this idea that he may have been LGBTQ? I found this story about him where he, at the age of 27, was advised to go to Panama to take a month off of work because he was very stressed out as a mortician. And he gets lost in South America. And he is in Colombia, and then he's in Venezuela. And the family is very afraid that something's wrong, that something's happened to him. But then he comes back. He comes back 35 days after he left. He sends a cable that all is well, and I'm on my way home. And when he does get home, he lies about who he were, where he was, who he was staying with, and being treated in a hospital for 10 days. Again, none of that is evidence, but when you put it all together, it keeps building on this suspicion. Then I was able to speak to his living niece, who is 98 years old and living in Boca Raton, Florida. And she said, yeah, Uncle Howard, the whole family thought he was gay. We didn't ever see him with a man or a woman, but the family just considered him to be gay. So that's what helped solidify my suspicion as I was researching this person.
Phoebe, so yeah, go ahead.
The point is that when we do find someone in our trees that's a little different, let's not deny it. Let's not rationalize it, not brush it away, say, oh, that couldn't have possibly happened. Oh, he was just single. He just was unlucky in love. No. The bachelor uncle or the spinster aunt weren't necessarily unlucky in love. Maybe they did have a partner, but we don't have documentation of that relationship because they didn't have the right to marry. And the family may not have passed that story down of funny Uncle Bob. We're not going to tell the children or the grandchildren about Uncle Bob and his friend. So that's where we as genealogists and researchers have to do a little bit more digging when we have that suspicion.
And Phoebe Beiser is the Ohio Lesbian Archives co-founder and board president. And Phoebe, I know that you've attended genealogy functions because professionally you were also the librarian and assistant manager of the history and genealogy department at the Public Library of Cincinnati and Hamilton County before your retirement. But you note that there were not a lot of workshops or lectures, or maybe no such workshops or lectures, about single gay or lesbian people from the past and in looking for them in genealogy efforts. So what does this type of work mean to you?
To me, well, as a lesbian, I was disappointed, of course. And that's why I'm, so necessary for people to be truthful about themselves and their relatives who become ancestors. And when I found out about Stewart's workshop through the Ohio History Connection, I was very excited. And it's like, I need to take this for myself and for on behalf of the Ohio Lesbian Archives, just to know it's out there.
And so when we think about the Ohio Lesbian Archives, and I know I've had you on this program to talk about that operation before, is there a way that that plays a role in people's search for the past?
It could as time goes by. Most of the materials are 19, follow along Victoria Ramstetter and my, who we were longtime friends back in the 70s, and we started saving things like magazines, newspapers, photos, posters of concerts, things like that. The thing is, since the collection is still relatively young, 1970s to the present, though we do have a few 50s and 60s materials, as today's younger people age and some of us elders die off, our collection's going to get older, you know what I'm saying? And one thing I'm thinking of that we have that could be very, very useful, there's a periodical out of Michigan called Lesbian Connection. And it's really kind of, people send stories or what's going on in their community. It's kind of, it's not pretty. It's just put together for information, not for visually. But lately, as lesbians that read that magazine and kept in touch with concerts and festivals and happenings all over the country, they are Michigan, but they cover nationally. I've noticed over the last few years, more and more obituaries, their friends and partners will write up, half a page or a page with lots of detail. So that any budding genealogists that recognize the name and partner and where they live, and just they're very rich, detailed obituaries. So we have to hold on to that magazine, definitely.
And were the Ohio Lesbian Archives and other LGBTQ archives around the nation and around the world are very important to this work, is being repositories of those types of records that Phoebe was just talking about. So maybe our ancestors left behind some love letters or a diary or other personal papers, or they appeared in a community newspaper, an LGBT community newspaper. And Phoebe's work is fantastic at preserving all of that. So future genealogists can use this as a source to help bolster their suspicions, their rainbow flags about their LGBTQ ancestors.
Well, Stuart, I wanted to ask you, because it seems like there's a bit of a challenge. I often will read about gay historic figures or people who were suspected of having been involved in same-sex relations, and they had been of some prominence in their profession or in the community. And a lot of times you come across a note that says, they had all their letters destroyed, or the family destroyed all of their letters, so that you deliberately cannot find this evidence that you might be seeking now. Has that posed challenges for you specifically in any of your research?
Well, absolutely, it poses challenges. There's I talk about Willa Cather, who was an author and won the Pulitzer Prize in 1922. She was a prolific letter writer, and we know that she was a lesbian in a long-term relationship with her editor, Edith Lewis. So the fact that she burned all of her correspondence makes it a bit difficult. But then her surviving letters were published in a book in 2013, which clearly shows the relationship that these two women had. Finding other things like that, is a bit more obscure. Now, Willa Cather was a fairly famous person, but others are not so famous, and that's where archives like the work Phoebe's doing is going to be so important to preserve.
I don't want to leave out Karen Robertson, who is also with us, the Ohio History Connection Manuscripts Curator, who has also worked extensively with the Gay Ohio History Initiative. Karen, the Ohio History Connection has helped put on this entire series, Where My Single Folk? This is a genealogy series that is designed to help people who are looking into their family histories do some research on those who might have never been married or might have been divorced or widowed or found themselves alone for some reason or another. So talk a bit about the series overall.
Yeah, so the series actually came together when the director of our library, Elizabeth Woods, she was actually doing her own research into her family history, and she wanted to know more about her aunt that she was close to, but she had been single most of her life, and so most of the records that we use to trace people are based upon their relations to other people. So if you're not married, if you don't have kids, it becomes increasingly hard to track you down. And so that kind of triggered Elizabeth to think about, other people might be having this kind of genealogy problem too, and the way that our records show that we're related to each other doesn't necessarily reflect how we actually feel about the people in our lives. There might be someone that isn't, you know, your mother or father, maybe it's your aunt, your uncle that you feel a little closer to. And so giving people the ability to document a fuller family tree.
And you had written a piece before that was published in the Ohio History Connection about leaving space for queerness in the archives. Mm-hmm. And of course, one of the series that was presented in Where My Single Folk was helping LGBTQ genealogy inclusion of all of our ancestors, which was the portion that Stuart Blondon-Trayman, who's also with us, presented on. Talk about what's important about what you characterize as leaving space for queerness in the archives.
Yeah, so that's kind of my thought on it, and what's kind of coming up in the scholarship now really is that we don't need to have 100% evidence to suggest that maybe someone was queer, because most of the time we're not going to have 100% evidence because they could not safely leave us that evidence. And if we continue to deny them their identity, we're just continuing the homophobia that got them stuck in that place that they couldn't tell us. And so we're talking a lot about leaving that space, a lot of inferences about everything else in history. You know, if I found a person had a box of baseball cards in their attic after they passed, I might make an inference that they were a baseball fan, and nobody has a problem with that. But if I found a box of their love letters in their attic and I made an inference that they were maybe LGBTQ, why then do we question that? And so it's just kind of leaving space for queerness not being a badge of dishonor on someone's historic legacy, and just being an option for everybody, both past and present.
Well, Stuart, let me go to you again, because I imagine that, you know, we were just talking about personal artifacts, personal letters that might be destroyed or lost, but the official record has probably been altered or deliberately written in such a way to leave no trace of the love that dare not speak its name during certain periods of our history. So what kind of challenge does that pose for this type of research?
Yeah, that certainly makes it challenging. We are looking for people who are deliberately living in hiding because of the times that they lived in. So it's certainly a challenge, but it's hopefully not impossible. The more we search, the more we track things down, we will find something. Earlier in the conversation, I was thinking about probate records for a single person. If they left behind a will, but they were single, and therefore they don't leave things to their spouse, they may not have children, they're not going to leave it to their children. Let's look at their probate. Who did they leave it to? That person is going to be very key to then track down who was this person in my ancestor's life. What kind of relationship did they have? And that can give us some information about a single person.
I'd like to ask each of you why this is important. And Stuart, I will start with you.
I think it's important because, again, we want to get away from this notion that homosexuality tarnishes a person's character. We want to be truthful to the past by telling those stories as honestly as we can now. We want to bring those people back into our family trees. We want to welcome them back. And we also want to give them a voice in the 21st century that they may not have had at the time that they lived, by telling their stories.
Phoebe, why is it important to go back and perhaps discover people who may have been of a certain sexual orientation or gender identity that was previously unknown publicly?
Well, for me, it's about an honest representation of history, truthful, Stuart mentioned truthfulness, the truth, no matter if they were just single or lesbian or gay. I mean, don't you want to know the truth personally about an ancestor? And also, the whole, that history is not, that we're made, that LGBT people are made invisible. I mean, we've been invisible for quite too many centuries as it is. So invisibility doesn't do anyone any good. The ancestor us now or historical archives that are trying to keep records that should be honest. So that would be the basic for me.
And Karen, would you share your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, this just kind of goes even past just the professional and into the personal. And I feel like in the LGBTQ community, often the word family doesn't just mean who you're blood related to. So as I'm doing this work, I see lots of the queer people that I'm recognizing in history as my ancestors, even though they're nowhere in my family tree. So it's for me about both for me and for other queer people who come to see our exhibits or read our blogs about seeing ourselves in the past and building up that kind of found family tree.
All right. And lastly, just a technical question, and hopefully all of you can help us with this. If there are people who are listening to this and thinking genealogy is hard enough as it is, you really have to devote a certain amount of time to it and passion to it if you want to fill out your family tree to any degree of significance. If you're looking for this particular type of information, though, if you're trying to find a presence of queer people in your past, and you run into these challenges, what is the advice to keep going, Stuart?
Well, the advice, I guess it comes from being motivated to find those stories and bring them back to life. And from that motivation, you start looking in everything that you can find about that person. Again, we can look at census photographs, newspapers, cemeteries, obituaries, military records, possibly medical records if they're available. We're going to be really scouring that person a little bit more than others who have left much more of a paper trail to bring their stories to life.
And Phoebe, I know you were just talking about the importance, basically, of this work. And so I imagine that plays into the advice in pursuing it.
Well, I think one that does explore this has to be a little patient with the discovery and just know, like, what is ahead? What am I going to discover? Maybe there's going to be some long months and you take a break or you turn to a different ancestor. But if you keep, it's sort of like being a detective. If you keep trying and exploring, you don't know what you will find. So there is, nobody said it would be easy as since marriage was legal in 2015 in the United States, the next generation's going to be of gay people are going to be much easier to find, you know, as there are more domestic partnership records, marriage records, and things like that. So it's just the way, you know, the way the search is right now, I would say.
And Karen, you talked about feeling a certain familiarity with people you've discovered and as being queer, as you call them, in your findings. So that seems like a pretty good motivation to keep going on when it gets tough.
Yeah, and I kind of have, you know, I think kind of two related pieces of advice on that topic. Number one being a reminder that the way that we view things like sexuality and gender has changed over time, and past cultures are, you know, even though we feel connected to them, that's a separate culture from how we live now. So just starting by reading about how, like, people in the past viewed these things can help you pick up on key terms and that type of thing. And I also think it's important to, you know, if you have people in your life that you can talk to that might share an identity now with someone in the past, they might pick up on things just from their own personal experience. So I think it's important to include that as well.
That's Karen Robertson, Ohio History Connection Manuscripts Curator. We've also been joined by Phoebe Beiser, Ohio Lesbian Archives co-founder and board president, retired librarian and assistant manager of the History and Genealogy Department of the Public Library of Cincinnati and Hamilton County, and Stuart Blondon-Tremon, a genealogist who presented as part of this Where Are My Single Folk series. Thanks to all of you, Stuart, Phoebe, Karen, for being with us today. We really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having us.
And you've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Our assistant producer is Nick Swartzel. Our technical director is Josh Elstro. Our theme music is composed by Rob Fetters. You can find archives of our program online at WVXU.org. I'm Michael Monks. We'll talk again tomorrow.